welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I am continuing my trend of having past guests come back and talk about a different episode, perhaps a significantly lesser episode, but we'll find out if that's the case this time. Welcome back, Jerry Canavan. Jerry, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, I mention that this episode that we're going to talk about might be a lesser episode than the one we talked about when you were on first, because your first appearance on Random Trek, what episode did we talk about?
A little episode called The Inner Light.
Yes, which I think, for many people, is probably the best episode of Star Trek. Certainly the best episode of TNG, if not all of Star Trek.
Yeah, and that's why we're talking about the second best episode of Star Trek today.
That's right. I might as well say what episode we're talking about, and then, Jerry, you can tell people about yourself. So the episode we're going to be talking about is not the second best episode of Star Trek. It is Human Error, which is a Voyager episode, Season 7, Episode 18. I should say that I am sure there are many fine – well, I'm certain there are many fine episodes of Voyager. There are many outstanding episodes of Voyager. And then there's this episode of Voyager. But before we delve into that, Jerry, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm an associate professor of English at Marquette University and work primarily on science fiction and different kinds of pop culture, superheroes, teach a Tolkien class, things like that. So I write a lot about Star Trek in various ways. So don't always return to Voyager. So this one was interesting.
So you teach college kids. You mold their minds into something. I don't know what. What is the most surprising thing that these kids that you assumed, what knowledge that you assumed they had, most surprised you when you found out, in fact, they did not know about X?
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, the tragedy of our lives is that we get older and older, so that the things we think are inevitable references always disappear. So the current generation really doesn't have any interest in The Matrix, for instance, which for a long time was a kind of automatic touchstone. Now you kind of have to find something else. The most reliable thing is to talk about Harry Potter, find some connection to Harry Potter, and you can get them.
Without a doubt, she has created a cultural touchstone, and I applaud her for that. It's just not for me, and that's fine. So how about Voyager? Is Voyager not for you? Look at that. That was a pro segue into Star Trek.
It was truly, truly something. You know, I listened, I watched every episode of Star Trek The Next Generation from the premiere on, most of them with my dad. It was kind of tradition for us. And we watched the beginning of DS9 and the beginning of Voyager, and then I went to college. And so I kind of fell off the Star Trek map a little bit. I have a very complicated relationship with Voyager. I've actually come to appreciate it a little bit more after listening to some of the incomparable panelists who are quite high on the show, and particularly Janeway as this figure of female power that really meant a lot to them when they were younger. And I can absolutely see that, but I have several objections to Voyager nonetheless. The first one is I just think structurally as a Star Trek series, it's confusing and kind of upsetting that they kind of constantly have to lose. That they, you know, they can never get home. That's the whole premise. Mm-hmm. And so they always are defeated. And in particular, Janeway's decisions never get validated because she never actually gets them home. And that seems strange because Data and Spock can solve problems like this over the course of 45 minutes. And I think it's discordant enough with the rest of the series, or the rest of the franchise rather, that it kind of makes Voyager seem like the B team. That somehow Geordi and Data could have solved this whole problem, right? They could have built a time bomb to blow up the array in the first episode and got home just fine. The other thing that I think really would have made the show better is if they allowed the series to have kind of permanent consequences, right? Like scratching up the model, putting limits on the number of torpedoes and shuttlecraft they could have, having characters permanently die. I think a lot of the series that came after Voyager that were kind of inspired by its missteps, like BSG and Stargate Universe and some of these other kinds of shows, did this Lost in Space thing a little bit better because they were willing to take a little bit more chances. So I think there was a good idea here that they didn't quite execute well. So that's always been my take on Voyager.
And I agree, especially about the battle damage and kind of lack of consequences and resetting every time. That is what has driven me crazy as I delve back into Voyager for this very podcast because
I mean you can imagine a version where the you know, one of the warp nacelles gets blown off and they have to staple something else on, right? And their ship has a giant hole in it after a while, and you know, just they're limping home, right? Like they could have raised the stakes so high, but instead it's just a different version of the, you know, the kind of Hilton in space. It never feels dangerous.
That's true. And then they could have sold multiple versions of Voyager models. Come on.
Look at the money they're leaving on the table.
It's,
yeah.
It's craziness. In order for consequences to really matter, you have to be willing to sacrifice a character. And the only reason that we would care is if it's a character that we know. And so that means there's a limited number of characters. Like, you know, could have like Naomi Wildman, I suppose, could die and she's a kid. So that would be sad. But it wouldn't really have the gut punch of if, let's say, we said an episode where Tuvok dies.
It's funny you say that because there are a list of at least four or five characters that I would be quite happy to kill. That's most of them aren't really in this episode, so we don't have to worry too much about them.
That is true. I do think that... So my problem with Enterprise is that I can never remember who the main characters, like their names are. And at least with Voyager, I remember all the characters' names. I may not like all of them. Like I even remembered Icheb's name and he's hardly a main character, but I was like, oh, look, it's Icheb.
I forgot that character even existed. I guess he's, you know, I didn't see a ton of the seventh season in its initial airing and kind of have seen it out of order. And I was really interested in him. I'm surprised they didn't make a bigger deal of him in Endgame.
Yeah, I mean, he was just kind of he just kind of hangs out there, and then he's like, I want to join the Starfleet Academy, which I have questions about if they would actually let him join or not. But that's neither here nor there.
Well, your podcast on Starfleet security, I think we'll have a lot of things to talk about because they make a lot of odd decisions about who they let have total access to their entire operation.
It is true. But though with Voyager has the excuse of we have limited resources. So this kid is smart. He can do stuff. So let's use him. And I'm sure that, you know, Captain Janeway will write a letter of recommendation and it'll be fine. So why don't we pivot to talking about this episode in particular?
Sure.
Human Error. This is a 7 of 9 episode through and through, which is generally a sign that it will be entertaining because I think 7 of 9 is a good character. And I've talked about this before that, you know, sometimes you can get lost. You can overlook the fact that they initially just added her because she's an attractive woman and they thought they could gather some viewers that way. But then it turned out that it was a very intriguing character and the Janeway 7 of 9 relationship is fascinating. So it all turns out very well. And this episode is totally thinking about or devoted to this idea that 7 of 9 is trying to figure out, come to grips with the fact that she's human, but she's not human, and she wants to get back to her humanity and figure out how to be human in the most creepy way possible. Is that a fair a summary of this episode?
Well, yeah, it's, you know, it's hard to know where to begin with it. It has that bizarre Barclay thing, right, where she's replicating her crewmates with some kind of weird alternative programming that we can kind of get into and try to figure out, you know, what did she ask the computer to do and why is it doing it in this way? I find a really interesting question.
The holodeck clearly should not be on any Starfleet ships. The moment that's in the TNG episode where, you know, Data said Geordi said create an opponent that can beat Data, and he created a sentient being that took over the ship. That's when they should have sent a memo to all other starships that said, power down your holodecks. Yeah. This is no good.
And not to beat up the premise of Voyager the way we already were, but the idea that the holodeck runs on a special soup that doesn't use any power from any other system, and so it's okay for them to still use this ridiculous machine even in their kind of cataclysmic situation is just another one of these kinds of fundamental structural flaws with Voyager, right? Like it's nonsense that they are devoting any resources to these weird gothic romances or science fiction movies and other kinds of weird things they're doing in there.
Yeah, or they should at least, I mean, you could argue if you are Captain Janeway and you have limited resources, you could say, okay, we will ration out holodeck usage because it will keep morale. And then you could have this subplot where, you know, 7 of 9 has somehow gamed the system and she is, because she's basically addicted to her alternate world for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And she's shirking her responsibilities and screwing things up because she enjoys this fantasy world. And who can blame her, really? Because, I mean, if I had access to a holotech, forget it. You know, you'd never see me again, because that's a fantastic thing. But and another reason why they should not be on starships.
And a bizarre management issue, right? Like, she, Janeway has at the ready the amount of time she's been spending on the holodeck, but no one, this has information hasn't gone to her before it becomes a crisis and the ship is nearly destroyed, right? Like, it should be automatic, right? 49 hours and 6 days or whatever it is,
yeah, that
right?
Seems like shockingly high.
Telling on her.
Yes, that's too much. They should put the parental controls back on. And my other question, so she sleeps. At one point, there's a scene in which she sleeps, one assumes, like 6 hours on the holodeck. And you think, doesn't somebody else want to use a holodeck? Isn't that like, and does the, if you are asleep, you would hope that the computer is smart enough to know, well, I don't really need to continue holodecking while you're asleep. So just turn it off. And then when you wake up, I'll turn it back on very quickly.
Yeah.
These are the things bizarre. I think about.
Yeah.
But so the point of this episode is, well, let's just go through it chronologically.
And we begin with the most exciting cold open in Star Trek history.
And possibly the shortest one.
30 seconds of piano playing.
Yes, but the big reveal, and I thought this was odd. I mean, it's the seventh season episode, so one assumes if you're watching this, you know who Seven of Nine is. So the big reveal is that Seven of Nine does not have her Borg implants as she's playing this piano. But if this is the first episode of Voyager that you've ever watched, or you're like a casual Voyager episode, Voyage watcher, it's a meaningless opener because it's just a woman playing a piano and you're like, I don't understand what's going on. But hey.
Yeah, it's so strange because the episode goes on in this vein for a while that she has the implants off, and it seems perfectly plausible that she could have had them removed. And that's the premise of the episode. And then it reveals that this is all the holodeck, right? As the baby shower becomes odder and odder. But it's why the subterfuge? What is the point of this reveal? I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I don't understand. So yeah, as you just said, that she's at this baby shower. Do you think, oh, well, that's nice, she's at a baby shower. She seems to be the belle of the ball. She's telling jokes and giving good presents, and everybody's having a great time.
Right.
Everybody's there.
And this is one of those moments where the Chakotay program has been given extra instructions, right? He's not really simulating the real Chakotay, because the real Chakotay would never have Seven give the first toast
and that's
a baby shower devoted to Tom and Valana, right? Like, something else is going on in the simulation related to Chakotay in particular, but some of the other characters as well.
And we'll come back to Chakotay, because I feel like we'll come back to that. And then you're like, oh, look, she's so good at baby showering and toasting. She does give a really good toast, I will say. Perhaps I will steal that toast if I'm ever called upon to have a toast. But then there's a moment at which Seven of Nine gets a call from the bridge, and we see Janeway and Tom Paris are on the bridge, but they were just at the baby shower. And I thought, wait a second, episode, how did they get there so quickly? And isn't this Tom Paris's one half of the baby shower couple? Shouldn't he still be there? It doesn't make any sense. And then it quickly became apparent, because she tells the holodeck to end the program, that she was on a holodeck program. And you think, that's kind of creepy. I think there should be a rule against having any holodeck simulations that include other people on the ship that you are serving on.
It has come up so many times in Star Trek history that people have done this inappropriately. You would think it would just be a standard rule. It's not allowed.
That makes me think that, and this is, I think you were alluding to this earlier, like the programming of the holodeck. Are these holodeck, like holodeck B'Elanna and holodeck Tom Paris, are these Seven of Nine's versions of them, or did she ask the computer to create them so that they are based on the actual people? It's a lot of questions I have.
Yes, it's very strange, especially when you get into again Chakotay, right?
Oh, and Chakotay is the big problem.
The level of changes that seem to have happened in his character in the name of this fantasy, right?
Yes, it is clear she spent time modding Chakotay for her program. Or maybe the computer is doing it adaptively, right? And because it knows what she wants and she's picking up on it. But we'll get to it. Yeah, this is a weird episode. And I was watching this with my wife, and she turned to me about halfway through, and she said, "This is boring, and I'm uncomfortable with it." I said, "Yeah, that seems about right." Yeah. But then off she goes. So there's an A plot and a B plot. It's hardly much of a B plot, but the Voyager has stumbled into what we quickly find out is a weapons range, a weapons testing quadrant. Mm-hmm. And in a moment that you alluded to earlier about, you know, Captain Janeway sometimes just being like, we need to stay on course, and other times being like, oh, look, there's a random planet we can visit. There are these big explosions, and Captain Janeway says, well, I see no reason why we should go around. Let's go through. And I thought to myself, well, maybe the big explosions are a reason why you should go around, but I'm not the captain of a starship, so what do I know?
Yeah, the whole thing was interesting as a microcosm of the leadership, right? Because she gives orders that can't quite be followed, right? When she orders Paris to turn into the explosion to protect the the underbelly of the ship, and he's like, sorry, it was too slow, right? Like, what? Why is any of this happening, right?
It's because they don't have enough 7 of 9 plots, so they need some explosions.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. So that plot, well, let's just deal with that plot very quickly. They get out of it fine. The warp core gets knocked out. They have to, reboot it, basically, and B'Elanna spends some time doing it. It's fine. Nobody dies. There's a purported, what I assume the writers thought was a really exciting scene at the end where they get the warp engine back online. They warp out of there. But oh no, two subspace missiles are chasing them, or one subspace missile is chasing them, and they need to figure out what to do. And 7 of 9, makes up for her couple of mistakes she's made in this episode and disarms the torpedo, and everybody's happy.
I'm going to take your word for it that happened, because having watched this episode twice in the last day, some of that I don't remember happening.
It did happen. trust me. I just watched the episode. But the more interesting thing, so the more interesting part of this is 7 of 9 basically just being further seduced by this holodeck fantasy that she has created, and ignoring both her duties, and, I think all of us have at one time or another at work perhaps not done all the work that we're supposed to do because we are distracted by something on the internet. So it's very relatable.
It's never happened to me, but I'll take your word for it.
All right. Well, I've read on the internet that it happens to people, because, of course, it would never happen to me either. And she is also skipping her regeneration cycles because she's spending so much time in the holodeck. Now, I also know that I have never lost sleep playing any kind of stupid game on my phone or, looking on Facebook for no particular reason. But I imagine people listening perhaps might can understand that this could happen. And I feel like the holodeck, not to belabor this point, but the holodeck is such a seductive, dangerous technology that I don't know how anything gets done by anybody.
It's bizarre. It's really inscrutable that this technology exists. It works the way it's depicted, and yet Starfleet is able to function. And it's always been my sneaking suspicion that one of the reasons that this franchise has never been able to advance past Voyager, at least up to now, right? Supposedly the Picard show is coming, is the holodeck technology, right? Particularly the Doctor as this figure who will take over Starfleet, right? The it's Doctor true. Can do everything these people can do. And as soon as the Doctors are kind of given their rights and let off that weird mining planet, they'll have a Doctor holoship and humans will be obsolete. And I don't know how they're going to deal with that in the Picard series. It seems like a real risk for Starfleet that they haven't really processed.
I do hope Robert Picardo has a cameo appearance on the new Picard show.
I would love it.
He's a delight.
Even if they somehow just use the old footage, if that character pops in a bit, I think that would be really terrific. And he is, as you say, sheer delight. And it would be perfectly plausible that he said, I let myself get a little older. I wanted to see what it was like.
Exactly. Patients respond to a more dignified look.
You just wrote that. We should be writing this for them right now.
That's right. Anyone who's listening, just pretend you didn't hear that first couple minutes that we just talked about. And Hollywood, if you're listening, send the check to us. And the Doctor is in this episode very briefly.
It is a very strange appearance. I honestly, genuinely, if I was ever a shipper, I really did ship the Doctor and Seven and was furious with Endgame that she wound up with Chakotay, which made no sense to me, especially since I hadn't seen this episode at the time. Mm-hmm. It was just inscrutable to me that she wound up with Chakotay, who, in my mind, was in a kind of weird psychosexual relationship with Janeway.
Yes.
Right? From the episodes that I had seen from the earlier parts of this series. And mm-hmm. so this entire thing is wildly confusing, where, you know, Janeway is Seven's mom and Chakotay is now her boyfriend and the Doctor is her father and her love interest and her doctor. All of his behavior in this episode is incredibly creepy in that context.
Yes. And Seven of Nine's behavior is also kind of creepy.
Oh, I don't want to let her off the hook at all, but if he's a doctor, he should be about medical ethics. It's stroking your patient's hair and kind of busting into their holodeck program and keeping these bizarre tabs on her where he's kind of constantly asking her what she's doing and trying to schedule more time with her for potentially unnecessary procedures. I don't know. The doctor raises some questions for me in this episode.
Yes, he has some issues with Seven of Nine. But there's no other medical people. Who else is going to help her? Tom Paris? He's not equipped to help her.
That was a subplot for a while, right? That he was
double duty. Yeah, exactly. I think they dropped that somewhere along the way. Yeah. So the thing that we've been talking around and the big kind of thing that we need to talk about is, so Seven of Nine has this kind of fantasy holodeck program, which we've talked about a lot. And an integral part of it is her relationship with holodeck Chakotay. And this is so... I said that I think there should be a rule against having, holographic representations of your crewmates. There should be a rule that you can also then not force them to fall in love with you. Because that just seems wildly inappropriate.
It is so strange. And again, you know, you don't know if she ordered the computer to make a Chakotay who would love her, or if the computer, as you say, is adaptable enough that it can figure out that that's what she wants and kind of nudge him in that direction. Or, I mean, I guess they get married, right? So in some sense, it is Chakotay's nature to potentially fall in love with Seven.
I guess the computer is watching them all the time. So maybe the computer knew, and she was just, the computer was nudging Seven of Nine towards the inevitable. Mm-hmm. Which that raises a lot of other questions about if the computer of Voyager is sentient or not.
All of that is, it seems so clear that the computer is sentient and they just don't want to talk about it.
That's true. And the computer is going to somehow create that Doctor full ship that will go across and save the galaxy. And so there's a little light flirting, it feels like, in the baby shower between Chakotay and Seven of Nine. But maybe he's just being, you know, like nice to her, and that's fine because sometimes it's hard to tell sometimes. And I think maybe that's what the program was kind of designed to do, because, you know, human interaction, social interaction is difficult, especially for someone who's been through what Seven of Nine has been through. Right. So that's one assumes the reason she is doing this. It is not how it all ends up. I feel like it's horribly wrong, but that's just me judging Seven of Nine. So anyway, Seven of Nine decides, oh, I don't need to sleep in my regenerative booth anymore. And Captain Janeway says, well, why don't you get some quarters? So she does. She decides to decorate it. Well, she doesn't really decide to decorate. She has no decorations. Neelix is there. He says, God. This place can use some curtains. In a scene that's way too long.
That she would involve Neelix in any aspect of her fantasy life is so preposterous. It is unbelievable.
Yes. Although I did find it interesting. So Neelix is the first person that she invites to her quarters. And he's there for a while, and he's helping her out, and he's being, you know, in his Neelix-y way, very helpful. And then Chakotay pops in. And then basically Seven of Nine says, Neelix, scram. And she says, oh, Chakotay, you're my first guest. Yeah. And I thought, Neelix was just, I don't like Neelix, but he was just there.
he was there in a professional capacity. Did that seem clear?
I just felt bad for Neelix at that moment because I was like, man.
I could never feel bad for Neelix.
And this is when, Chakotay is like, geez, this place could use some decoration. Also, I'm Native American. Did you remember? Here's a dream catcher. And I was like, oh, man. Why did they make him give her a dream catcher?
The Chakotay all-purpose Native American backstory has not aged well at all.
No.
And it's very much a part of other aspects of, you know, the TNG era Trek, but it is kind of brutal to see.
Yeah, I have nothing against
perspective.
I would have welcomed a fully fleshed out Native American character that seems like it is actually respecting the history of the Native American people. Chakotay is not that. And him showing up with a dream catcher is just cringeworthy.
Yeah.
And she puts it above her bed, or Neelix says,
put it Neelix puts it above her bed.
Which is, there are a lot of weird things happening in this Solideck fantasy. The other weird thing is, so she says, oh, Chakotay, you should come back and we'll have, I'll make you some dinner because I'm learning how to cook. And Chakotay says, okay. So then he comes back and her quarters are all decked out. And she has put a kitchen in her quarters, which I thought was interesting. And she has a lot of carrots.
And he indicates that he's going to requisition her a replicator. As if they aren't standard in the rooms, they get wheeled in somehow or get bolted in.
You would think that a replicator was standard issue, but apparently not.
And much less where is this being requisitioned from? The ship is a self-contained unit, right? Like, and they have, a tank of them in the basement. They can pull one out.
I assume you can replicate a replicator with a replicator.
Well, that seems to lead to other kind of logical problems.
Yes, I don't know how those all work, but she doesn't have one, which is
you can't, right? Because on DS9, right, they have a problem where they like Bajor has like five replicators and they can't make it must have something in it. You can't, it's made of latinum on the inside or something.
That's right, that's the secret ingredient. I have a lot of questions. I mean, I love Star Trek, but I have a lot of questions about how the economy works and how basic things happen in the Star Trek. But it doesn't really matter. The important thing is that Chakotay and 709 are in the kitchen. They are making braised leeks and
I do want to linger here for a moment because this was, to me, the Scott McNulty moment of the episode where we see 709 in this kind of beautiful dress, right? She looks stunning. And then the camera pans over and Chakotay is wearing like a burlap sack, right? Like this, the uniform, the non-uniform clothes of the future.
Oh,
you have commented many times on how terrible they look, but his outfit is one of the worst things I've ever seen on any human being.
It is awful. A 709, as you said, rightly, looks beautiful. She's decked out. This is a date. She's ready. Chakotay shows up in like a
overall
a safari Nehru jacket or something. I don't know.
It's unbelievable. And Ikeb, right? His outfit elsewhere in the episode is Jake Sisko bad as well, right? Nobody in the future is wearing well tailored clothes.
It's except the style of the time, I guess. I don't know. I did kind of feel like I felt like Chakotay put on something that Neelix rejected. And he was like, this is good enough. Let me go.
I thought I saw in one of the Memory Alpha things I looked at that was actually continuity. He'd worn that outfit in another episode, right? That's from the Chakotay line.
Oh, dear. Oh, poor Chakotay. Yeah, that's not good. And he takes off his coat at one point. It's just, and then it doesn't get better without the coat. Yeah, that's not good. And my wife, who is a food writer and a cookbook author, said, why do they have so many carrots if 709, all the things 709 said she's making, none of them require carrots? I said, I don't know. She just has a lot of carrots that they need to chop up.
Right. And with proper technique.
This is a weird scene. Marisa, who is my wife, turned to me and said, are they flirting? And I said, yes, they are. And there's some, 709 showing him how to cut up carrots, and then Chakotay tasting us like a sauce or something by dipping his finger in, which, by the way, you shouldn't do because it's disgusting. Furthermore, disgusting is he then makes 709 taste it off of his finger, which is weird.
And then he goes back to the finger too.
Yes.
for a second.
Is weird.
Yeah,
I don't like it.
And he is in some level her superior officer, right? Like the predatory behavior of these. men in these Starship vessels. I mean, where is HR?
This is, well, they don't have any HR. The HR person died in the first episode, and this is what happens. And so, you know, they have dinner, Chakotay. So at first I thought, oh, she's inviting Chakotay over. Chakotay will just assume that it's a friendly colleague's dinner because she just moved into her quarters. But then Chakotay makes it clear that this is a date. And I thought, well, that's kind of weird. But Seven of Nine clearly agrees that it's a date. And they have a very good date, I suppose.
It's very confusing. They seem to sleep together perched on the couch. Yeah, fully clothed.
I'm unsure if we are to believe that they just fell asleep together, because they do wake up fully clothed.
Yeah, and in a very uncomfortable position.
Yes, and then she has to leave because she's Chakotay. The real Chakotay, I think, hails her and says, you know, we've got stuff that you need to do. But did she sleep there the whole night? Did she just like fall asleep for 15 minutes? I don't know. It's a lot of questions. And what did they do?
the holodeck might know that the story advances 6 hours and could have only had her out for 15 minutes, right?
Like, that's true.
Yeah, the holodeck chronometer may have known, because it knew, for instance, that the wine would just complicate matters, right? So the cork breaks off and they can't drink the wine that he's brought. Like, this weird architecture of this date is very precise.
It is true. And that made me also think of something else that is irrelevant, but I wonder if the food that you eat, if you are a person and you are in a holodeck and you're preparing a meal, is that actual food? Because a holodeck is very much like, it's not that hard to have a replicator. So, you know, you can just create the food and it's beamed in or something, and so you can eat it. Or is it holographic food that you cannot eat?
I think that is addressed in either canon or in novels. And I believe things you ingest are real matter and the other stuff is hollow matter, but I'm not 100% sure that that's always consistent. But, for instance, the snowball in the first episode that comes out of the holodeck,
Picard,
right? That was real matter, not hollow matter, because it passes the thing. So my deep nerddom of Star Trek tells me that I think this stuff you eat in the holodeck is real nutritious food that your body can use.
As it should be.
I feel like I might want to eat a lot of things in the holodeck that I wouldn't necessarily want to take with me out of it.
Well, that brings up an interesting question, though, because I think I talked about this a couple episodes ago. This is replicator related as well. Like, if you order like a chocolate cake and you eat an entire replicated chocolate cake, one assumes that the replicator can replicate it so that that chocolate cake has the nutritional value of something that is good for you, like a salad. And it just tastes and looks like a chocolate cake.
Right.
And then so you can eat whatever you want.
Yeah. But the ones on Discovery, right, scold you if you try to eat
delicious
food.
But those are primitive.
So maybe they perfect the method.
That's right. Those pushy replicators on Discovery, I would not like those replicators. They are judgmental.
And mean,
a little mean. And I wouldn't want the original series replicators, because they seemingly made blocks that you had to eat. Tooth blocks or salad. You could have one or the other.
Well, I can't wait for season 2 of Discovery to explain how we went from the Discovery replicators to the cubes, right? With extended plot lines.
I'm sure it's going to be the focus. The main focus of season 2 will be that, and the uniforms.
Yeah.
One can only hope.
And where Spock's facial hair comes from and goes.
It's a pocket dimension. And the other thing, so Chakotay, not only are they having a romance, but then Chakotay on the holodeck basically tries to teach Seven of Nine how to feel her music instead of, you know, be analytical about her music, in which is a weird scene as well. I don't know. I just am creeped out.
And essentially plagiarized from like 6 different TNG scripts, right?
Yes.
Data was always acting wrong and playing his music too perfectly, and I'm not a musical person, and so that's all just gibberish to me.
Yeah, I don't know.
This claim that her perfect playing is not human somehow.
It seems like you want to play it perfectly. I don't know, but apparently, if you want to give it feeling, you turn off your metronome and you play with uneven tempo.
It's like the targeting computer. I get it now.
Exactly. Then you use the force, and you have soulful music that appears, and they also, I think, so we may have mashed together two dates, because they have the first date where Seven of Nine cooks, and then there's the second date, which I think maybe ends quickly. I don't remember. Chakotay brings a chicken, like a, you know, a Costco rotisserie chicken with him. and he's like, here you go. It's delicious. I didn't make it. I replicated it, but let's have some chicken. And I don't think they actually eat the chicken. I think she is. This is when she's called away, and Janeway is like, you spent a lot of time on the holodeck. What's up? Mm-hmm. And Seven of Nine lies and says she's working on like a gravimetric array or something. And Janeway clearly knows she's lying and says, oh, when this crisis is over, I'll be interested to see your gravimetric array.
Yeah, this is a kind of global comment about the whole episode, but it really struck me how cruel everybody is to everybody else on Voyager, which is something, I don't know if that's particular to this episode, but almost every line of dialogue that everybody says is some kind of like snippy, undercutting, nasty comment, right? So, Janeway asked Chakotay, what's up with Seven? He's like, you should ask her, right? And Paris invites her to the baby shower, and she says she might not come. And he's like, what's the matter? Don't Borg like babies. like everybody is just like revved up.
Yeah.
Be mean. And Janeway's behavior is kind of that kind. Like, she's kind of asking her for a friend and kind of calling her out, to the point where, you know, you kind of get the sense that Seven's like, well, now I got to invent a new gravity machine too.
Great. Yeah. I did notice that. And in particular, I noticed it when, so Seven of Nine, there are interesting points in this episode. So Seven of Nine avoids going to the actual baby shower because she will be uncomfortable there in the social situation. One assumes that she figures, well, it's not going to live up to her holographic simulation, which will be true. So she doesn't go. Then she feels bad. So she goes and she makes a little gift for the baby and brings it to B'Elanna. And B'Elanna is like, oh, thank you for this weird gift, which is what she basically says, which I thought that was strange. But that was fine. And they have a little talk about hair, which I thought was kind of weird. But I think that what was happening is Seven of Nine is trying to be more human and engage. And so that's what she thought she would do. Mm-hmm. That was all fine. She leaves. And then Harry Kim comes over.
You did pass over the fact that she, despite having a total encyclopedic knowledge of human interaction, she created baby booties that are coded to like 40 degrees Kelvin.
You never know.
Maybe it was intended as a joke. Now that I think about it, maybe this was weird kind of robot humor.
I think she was trying a joke.
Yeah, but it's presented as if this is an earnest, like a gift for which she will be praised.
And they're ugly shoes, but you know, full credit to 709 for trying. You know, she's nervous about it. This is not her area of expertise. This whole episode structure is basically, you know, 709 excels at everything. And when she doesn't excel at something, she is incredibly frustrated and wants to stop. And so she doesn't excel at social interactions. Mm-hmm. So this, you know, her trying with B'Elanna shows us a little bit of character progression for her. I think I may also be giving this episode more credit than it deserves, mm-hmm. but that's how I will read it. But the moment
that I did read a review of it from somebody who I used to read the reviews of every week, even when I wasn't watching the show, a guy named Jammer on the internet.
Oh, yes.
And that was his complaint, that you see Seven going through these changes, and then the last 30 seconds of the episode are like, just kidding, she's back to normal now. Yeah. And he was like, there's 4 episodes to go, just let her change, let her grow in some sense. Like, what is the point of this reset in the final 2 or 3 minutes of the show that turn her back into the drone again?
That's
jumping to the end, but it's a very strange construction. Like, why not just have it be that she goes through the surgeries and has the thing taken off her face for the last couple episodes?
Or even more simple than that, the end is Chakotay sees her and is like, hey, Seven, you know, you've been working hard. Mm-hmm. Why don't you come join us? Neelix is giving a cooking class, whatever. Right. And I think a better ending would have been her hesitating and then saying, I will attend or something, you know, mm-hmm. 7 of 9 instead of, it would have been weird if she said, I'd love to go, but something, you know, robotic in the way she is, to say, oh, look, she's learned that in order for her to really, truly be better at the social interactions, she needs to interact socially with actual people and not people that she's controlling. But instead, she says, no, I'm not going.
But they just had no idea what they were doing, because I think an episode or two later, she and Chakotay get stranded on a planet together, and they were instructed by the producers not to play it with sexual tension, even though this episode happened and in Endgame they're married. But in this intervening episode, they just play it completely straight, as if they're merely coworkers. It's just the one hand doesn't know what the other hand is doing, right?
Yeah, that's very strange.
Even with 4 or 5 episodes to go, they still don't have an arc for this character, this narrative situation,
which is a shame. And so, like many Voyager episodes, my assessment of this is it was close, it was an interesting premise, but overall it did not a good episode of Star Trek make. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I when I come to Voyager, it's primarily for Seven and the Doctor. I really like the Doctor as a character. My all-time favorite episode of Voyager is the one where they make a copy of the Doctor, even though we were told that's impossible, and he wakes up hundreds of years in the future and has to deprogram this society from their belief that Voyager was evil. And then at the end of it, he flies off in a shuttlecraft by himself to try to get to Earth on his lonesome. I love that. I love the Doctor. So the Doctor is a huge creep in this episode, so that bumps me out. Seven is not doing interesting Seven things to me. This really films like a rejected Data plot line or something, right? Like this same thing we've seen over and over and over again with not at all enough variation to really make it interesting for me. And so for me, it was returning to this episode, I was just really thinking in about Endgame and my disappointment with it when I watched it, when it originally aired, and trying to put this, you know, imagine this is minutes from the end of the series. And they are kind of wasting their time on this when there are so many other elements of the series that are so much more interesting, like the baby, like, the straggler that they picked up, right? There are so many things that they might have done with this time instead. So I don't think I would recommend the episode as a, you know, you posited the tragic figure of the person for whom this is the first episode of that they've ever watched. I would direct that person to a different episode, I think.
Yeah, this is not a good episode. I feel like I like what they were trying to do, but like you said, at the end, the last 30 seconds, they kind of negate everything that they were working on, and so you're like, well, what's the point of this episode? So many Voyager episodes, the last 30 seconds, you think, well, then what's the whole point? Why did you do this if this doesn't mean anything?
Yeah. The fundamental series flaw of Voyager, I think, is that they just never allowed anything to stick over time.
Yes, and yet Harry Kim sticks around for the entire time.
He gets his little moment where he's been in too many Star Trek episodes and he thinks she's been possessed and just goes back to work.
Well, that was what I was saying, that I thought that was kind of mean, because she's trying to be nice and he's like, oh, she must be, there's an alien invasion and they've taken over 7 of 9. I'm like, come on. Don't be a jerk, Harry.
He's like, just another Tuesday. It doesn't matter to me.
That's true. I was like, whatever. I have to go back to recalibrating these coils. Well, speaking of recalibrating coils, I don't know what that means. Thank you so much for joining me and talking about this subpar episode of Voyager.